The Rich Zeoli Show podcast is sponsored by Mike Venaria Jr. with Osperity Private Wealth.
Hi, I'm Mike Venaria Jr., Wealth Management Specialist. Make your retirement dreams a reality by creating your retirement plan today. Call me at 856-252-0107.
So the question is, where do we go from here with Venezuelan oil? That is the issue as Maduro sits in jail. Tim Walz runs away. And there's only one guy who can help us break it down in our fourth and final hour. Welcome back to the show. Glad you're here. 855-839-1210 on X at Rich Zeoli. And that's our buddy Daniel Turner, founder and executive director of Power of the Future. So, Turner, Happy New Year, first of all. We can still say that. It's only the first week, right? So,
yeah, you know, the statute of limitations, I think, runs out today. So you're okay. But when people in like February are like, Happy New Year, it drives me up a wall.
All right. So today's the day. That's it. Yeah. You're done.
That's it. We're done. Right. Yeah, because it's Monday. And then I'll give you Monday.
All right. Fair enough. So then I'll just say Happy Tuesday if we talk tomorrow. Like, let's do that. How was your New Year's? Did you have a good holiday? Good break?
I had a wonderful Christmas break. New Year's, I was in bed by 10:30. So
good for you.
Yeah, you know, I mean, not much changes. Well, nothing changes in the next day. You still got farm work chores to do, and you still got work. You know, so I'm not a New Year's person. Never was, but we all like to start afresh, and so that's good for everybody.
Yeah, that is good for everybody. And then, of course, we had New Year's. We had like a couple quiet hours, and then all of a sudden, next thing you know, we're grabbing Maduro in his PJs and bringing him out the door. I'll tell you, Trump doesn't give people much time off for the holidays with the news cycle.
No. A lot of people had a really busy holiday season, that's for sure. And I'm just curious at this point, what's more valuable? Is it Venezuelan oil or Somali daycares? Like, if I was going to make my investment for 2026, where am I putting my money?
It's a great question. There's so many jokes out there. One of the ones I saw was that it was easier to find Maduro at the presidential palace than it was to find a child at a Somali daycare in Minnesota. That was a good one.
That's a good one. That's a very good one.
Talk to me about Venezuelan crude, because I've heard a lot about that being not as good, I guess, is the word, as our oil.
It's not that it's not as good. It's that what you extract from the ground is measured by a couple of important factors, like everything, right? Where, you know, wheat is measured for how good of the bread it will make, and minerals, how pure they are, right? So everything that comes from the earth is measured by certain factors, and oil is measured by two principal ones: how much sulfur it has, and how viscous, how thick it is. And that's why you hear the expression light sweet crude, which means it's not very thick and it's not very sulfuric. And the only thing that makes it bad is that it just costs a lot more to get those contaminants out of the pure stuff, right? Just like if you bring a bunch of rocks from a quarry, it's going to cost you a little more to get rid of all of the things that are not the silver or the gold. But the gold itself is still great. So Venezuelan oil is very, very heavy, and it is very sulfuric. So it takes a little bit more effort to clean it up. America is blessed with incredibly sweet and light oil, pretty much, especially what comes from the Gulf of America. So Venezuelan oil is great. It's just a little bit more of a challenge to bring it to market. But that's what the industry does. This is what they do best.
Yeah. All right. So then I guess playing devil's advocate here, is it good that we're going to have access to the oil now, presumably, because I imagine that the new government's going to want to work with us on that. I mean, it's, you know, makes sense. They don't want to be taken out of their bedroom in the middle of the night. But is that competition for our oil industry?
It's probably not competition for our oil industry, because we refine all of the world's oil. We're the world's number one refiner. So even under Maduro, his oil was coming to America to be refined, and then his country was just buying it right back, right? And that's where oil imports and export numbers are a little bit hard to read because it looks like we're importing 25 million barrels a day, but we're not. That oil is getting turned around and sold. That crude is getting turned around and sold on the back end. So it's not really competition. What I think it is I put this on my X account not long ago. I think this is an end for that awful hippie slogan, no blood for oil. Of course, I'm not calling for blood, but I am calling for oil. Oil makes the world go round. Oil gave Russia its wealth, and what did they do with it? They invaded Ukraine. Oil made under Joe Biden. Oil made Iran rich under Joe Biden, and what did they do? They launched the attack on October 7th. Venezuela oil goes to China right now. And China uses it to threaten Taiwan, to control the seas in Southeast Asia. I don't want blood, but I do want oil. And if America starts to control the world's oil, then America starts to control the world. And I think that is a good thing. So I am pro seizing oil everywhere because that means America is taking control. And I like that.
Now, when we think about Cuba, which was relying on Venezuelan oil, cheap Venezuelan oil, they're not going to have that anymore. So that means there's a potential there for that socialist communist regime to fall as well. We know that Maduro was not the duly elected president. He was the dictator in the truest form. I mean, he chased out his opposition party, would not hold elections. Lost the last election that he ran in, and then the guy who beat him had to flee. So he was a bad dude. There's a lot of bad, crazy people out there in the world.
Yep.
And a lot of them have this weird club where they all kind of rely on each other's energy to keep the lights on, it seems, whether it's Russia, China, Iran, Cuba, Venezuela. I mean, am I wrong in that? But they all have this kind of, I would say, I mean, we've heard axis of evil, but it's like the axis of oil, sort of.
It is, and they're all allies, and they are all also, to a certain extent, they are a threat to the United States, right? So there are countries that hate us and dictators who hate us. A lot of them have just put travel bans. Burkina Faso, I know you and your lovely family were thinking about going there this summer, so that's off the list now, right? Mali is off
the list. But I did take out the travel insurance, which is key, so.
That's good. So you'll make it up. Right. Those countries, no offense to them, or with all due offense to them, who cares? Right. They are only a threat to America when people like Joe Biden open the border and bring in the Burkina Fasoans who then come to America and steal our resources and threaten our people. There are lots of bad countries in the world. Screw them. I don't care. Let them just be miserable. Terrible for the people, but that's their problem. But there are countries in the world like Iran, like Russia, like China, like Venezuela that are run by bad guys that are a threat to America. So when people say, well, like America first, and now you're taking over countries, how is that America first? It is America first when Venezuela brought, you know, several million gangsters to our shores and Joe Biden accepted them, right? How many American girls were killed by Tren de Aragua guys who Maduro shipped to our country? Not just the drugs, but the gangs that he imported to America for the sole purpose of causing chaos. And it worked. Right. So
he put a bounty on Maduro. He just never did anything about it.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a great point. America first is not America isolationism. And if countries are threatening us and are a threat to us, then I have no problem using the military for good. I think the difference is we're not going to regime change. We're not going to, you know, be there for 20 years. The people of Venezuela don't want this guy. So if we can step in and then eliminate a threat to America, I think that's a great thing. And simultaneously, if countries like China are now wondering where they're going to get their oil from, that's an even better thing.
You know, I'm not of the same mindset in terms of regime change. I don't care. I don't really want. It's not a priority for me to have the U.S. go in and do all these things. But I think it's important to note Maduro was wanted by the United States of America. There were arrest warrants out on him. He was a fugitive, and there's precedent for doing this, like what we did with Noriega with Panama. But I think this is going to send a wake-up call to a lot of these other regimes, which is, you should change. You know what I mean? It's kind of like the end of Rocky IV. It's like, well, if I can change, you can change. We all can change. They should probably think about changing, because if I were them, I would, considering that this is a president who is not going to sit back and let these countries send drugs to this country and do all the other things. He's not, and it's very obvious. And he views the Western Hemisphere as being America first, to make sure that we've got countries who are not threats and who are our friends. He's going to do these things. And so they would be wise if they were to play nice. And I think that that's what you're going to see as the result of this. I think, you know, you get a fugitive, you arrest a guy, you bring him to the United States of America to face justice, and the rest of these countries know they could easily wind up getting an indictment against them filed in federal court tomorrow for aiding and abetting drug fugitives and drug cartels and everything else. And it's on the president, who he recognizes as the leader of a nation. So this may be a moment for other countries in the Western Hemisphere to get their S together, you know?
Yeah, it's a great point. And do you remember going back, you know, over the last decades, really since the 2000, remember like when Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, the president of Iran, came to America, and he was hosted by Columbia University, mm-hmm. and gave a speech against President Bush, and we just had to sit there and take it. And then he kidnapped a whole bunch of soldiers, sailors under Obama, and we just sat there and take it. And Kim Jong-un is always launching missiles, and we're just supposed to sit there and take it. There was this idea in America that, like, all these little petty dictators can be a pain in the ass, and America just has to kind of deal with it. And it was the same mentality of, again, where people like Harry Reid would call George Bush a loser, and he would say, like, well, that's just politics. Or Harry Reid would say Mitt Romney hasn't paid taxes in 10 years, and Mitt Romney was like, well, that's just politics. There was this idea that, like, being the big dog means everyone's allowed to kick you in the teeth a little bit, and you just have to take it. And I think that's shifted under President Trump. I think
big time.
Yeah, like Venezuela, that did steal American assets. We're not just going to take it anymore. Like, we're going to kidnap your leader, and we're going to take our assets back. And if you're bombing Christians, you know what? Maybe we're not going to go into Nigeria, but we're just going to kill a bunch of terrorists, because you deserve to die. Right? Like, we're not just going to sit there and be like, this is wrong. We're going to have a hearing. And I think that's the mentality that if the Republicans want to keep their majorities, that's what they want to see in their elected officials as well. It's not enough to just be outraged. They want action. And by God, is President Trump a man of action, right? The Congress would still be having a hearing about this. The UN would have a resolution, you know, and you know, Tim Walz says he's been investigating fraud in Somali fraud for years. Well, how did that go? Right.
Yeah.
So you got to tell you, I love action. We can argue whether or not it's going to succeed and all of that stuff. But isn't it nice to see a president who just does stuff, like decisively does stuff?
And well, you know, on the point on the point. Yeah, no, not to interrupt, but I was going to say, on the point of doing stuff, look at what we're doing with nuclear power in this country. I mean, we're actually doing it. I feel like that's another area where for years we talked about, oh, we need nuclear. We didn't do anything about it. It's natural gas. It's like, well, you know, we need natural gas. We need to have more natural gas. Didn't do anything about it. We played this game, and I think a lot of Republicans played this footsie game when it came to climate change, where they wanted to be, you know, I'm all for the above solutions, and they were kind of in a little bit on energy, but not all the way in, because they didn't want to lose any street cred on climate change or any of the other nonsense they thought. And that's over, thank God. And so now we're seeing action on oil, natural gas, nuclear power, all these things. We're not seeing action on wind and solar, though, thank God. In fact, just the opposite. We're seeing action against those things, which I think is very, very positive. So, you know, finally, and that's also great, because we need this energy, and we're doing something about it.
We are. And you know, we need to produce more electricity. We need to keep energy prices down. And you know, just a couple of years ago, if an action like this Venezuela operation had happened, oil would have gone up $15 a barrel within minutes, right? We've seen this type of action before where markets respond. Oil, you know, it went up a little bit, but it's still $57 a barrel, right? You're not going to feel the impact of that in any meaningful way. And what does that show? It shows that there's such resilience in our energy markets because of American energy dominance. Compare that to that cackling cow, Jennifer Granholm, when she was asked, the Biden energy secretary, when she was asked about OPEC, and she laughed and laughed. OPEC controls oil, and there's nothing we can do. My God,
yeah.
What defenestration, what cowardice, what capitulation, right? Like, just nothing I can do. I am this. We're America. We can do whatever the hell we want. And God, I want to feel that way again. We haven't felt that since the Reagan years, quite frankly. Like, don't F with us. We're America. Don't F with our citizens. We will kidnap you in the dead of night while you're asleep on your own military base, right? Don't F with Christians. We will bomb the crap out of you on Christmas Day while the president's, like, having a toast at Mar-a-Lago. Yeah, we gave him a Christmas gift. I love it. I love it. I absolutely love it.
Daniel Turner's with us. He's very happy today at the ass kicking of America. Let me ask you this, though, on the issue of oil. And now, how does Putin react to all this, you think?
Yeah, you know, I mean, he's not so much reacting to the Venezuela. Granted, his access of evil is breaking up a little bit. He's got to be reacting to 7 months of low energy prices, right? Oil prices worldwide are 30% lower than they were just a year ago. And that is how he finances his military, right? That surplus cash is how he keeps his oligarchs in check and how he keeps his people. There's a lot of money coming in. That money's not coming in anymore, and his military is costing him a lot of money. And the quickest way to end a war, as Ronald Reagan taught us, is to start bankrupting the country who's launching it.
Yep.
So I don't think Venezuela is his biggest problem as much as American oil dominance, which is going to bankrupt him. And that's a great thing.
And then, so then China, where do they fit into all this?
That's the best thing. I think, and I hate to give away the president's cards, right? I think this is all a war on China without ever having to mention their name. Publicly, the president will say, I have great respect for Chairman Xi. We have a great relationship, great respect for the Chinese people. But look at the actions he has taken on manufacturing, on tariffs. And now he has really stopped Iran from producing oil, and he stopped Venezuela from producing oil. Mm-hmm. And if you are China, you are crap, you're dropping egg rolls in your pants right now. Like, you're petrified because your country can't survive, right? The Chinese economic myth can only last so long, and that bubble is about to burst with President Trump not saying a word about China. Not a word. Everything is about Venezuela, it's about terrorism, it's about this and that. And I think the whole thing is focused on China. And that's another great thing. This guy is playing a level of 3D chess that idiots like Senator Murphy are just too dumb and too angry to realize.
Well, Senator Murphy's too dumb to play just chess, let alone 3D chess. I mean, I don't think you'd take my 5-year-old in a chess game, but he's a moron, that guy. He's one of the biggest ones. Any parting words for Tim Walz, Daniel Turner?
Boy, oh boy, I never believed. I've seen a lot of people tweet like, this guy was almost our vice president. He was never almost our vice president. I think Tim, people are saying, you know, maybe he's going to think of the Senate. Tim should be lawyering up. I don't think people are done with him in that level of
no.
You know,
and don't you think more is going to come out too? Because it's the tendency of all these people who try to stay and fight. But you just got to wonder how much more is going to be exposed here in all this. And he knew he just could not survive it.
Yeah. And I put this on my Twitter X account as well, because it is bipartisan. And the height of the COVID nonsense, sorry, pre-COVID nonsense, when COVID was still a national security secret, the ranking senator on the Intelligence Committee, who was a Republican from North Carolina, Richard Burr, used that opportunity to make lots of stock trades. And he made about $3 million in that deal. And when he was caught, he resigned. Mm-hmm. And he prayed to God it would go away. And lucky for Senator Burr, it did go away. He seems to have gotten away with it. Tim Walz is doing the exact same thing. He is guilty. He doesn't want this to come to light, and he hopes his resignation will lead to that. The difference, Richard Burr didn't steal money from me. He stole my freedom. He could have warned me about COVID, but instead he used it to make himself rich. But he didn't really steal from me. Tim Walz did steal from me. He stole from American people.
And I think to your point earlier, Daniel Turner, unlike previous times, this time, this Department of Justice is just not, I mean, I hope, but I don't think they'll just let it go. We've been a little slow on going after the deep state, but I have confidence they're going to go after Tim Walz, not out of political retribution, but because it's the right thing to do because of how many people were ripped off here. And it's just, you know, you can't just, politicians in the past would just resign and then it was like, oh, it's all forgiven. Yeah. You resign. That can't be the case. Not anymore. We got to have a new standard here.
And never trust people when they hide behind the children. The climate people do this. This is not about, this is about the children, Rich. This is about the children and their future. The daycare crap is about children. Vaccines is about children. COVID was, when Democrats hide behind children, they are lying because they don't give a damn about children unless they can abort them. So never trust a Democrat when they talk about the children.
From egg rolls in your pants to abortion. Daniel Turner, this has been one of your feistiest interviews. I like it. And that's because I started off by saying Happy New Year. I got you all fired up.
Going to be a great year, Rich. God love you.
And you can follow him on his X account, which he's mentioned 18 times during this interview, at Daniel Turner PTF, by the way. You can't just set my X account and then not say it. So Daniel Turner PTF at Power of the Future, of course. All right, brother. We'll talk again this year, I'm sure, many times. So
I love you, brother.
Happy Monday. You. See you, pal. Yeah, Turner's all fired up. I love it. All right, that's the big story of the hour brought to you by Dr. Mike Vinaria, Vinaria Dental. Go see him today for your perfect smile. Two locations to serve you, Cinnaminson and Woodbury. Dr. Mike is the man. He's going to give you the beautiful smile you deserve. And so what are you waiting for? Let 2026 be the year of your smile. You deserve it. All right, coming up, latest reaction on what's next in Venezuela, on Tim Walz's resignation, all that to come in our fourth and final hour here on Talk Radio 1210 WPHE. Don't go away.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
All right, so there are, I don't think I've heard anyone fall off the ladder all afternoon. Is that me?
Don't jinx it.
Well, the show's almost over. We only have a half hour to go, so just saying. Yeah. We are a little light on spots today, huh?
Like I said earlier, I've been scraping the bottom of the barrel to get us some decent break length.
Man, I'm telling you, holy cow. All right, well, let's see. We got some other stuff we got to get to. We got to talk about what Ambassador Mike Walz said today. Walz is listening, not Tim Walz, but Mike Walz, as he addressed the United Nations regarding Venezuela and what happened there and how we're not at war with the Venezuelan people. So we spoke to the UN today. It's his, the UN Security Council, I should say. This is cut number two. Mike Walz, take a listen.
This past weekend, colleagues, the United States successfully carried out a surgical law enforcement operation facilitated by the U.S. military against two indicted fugitives of American justice, narco-terrorist Nicolas Maduro and Celia Flores. Colleagues, Nicolas Maduro is responsible for attacks on the people of the United States, for destabilizing the Western Hemisphere, and illegitimately repressing the people of Venezuela. As Secretary Rubio has said, there is no war against Venezuela or its people. We are not occupying a country. This was a law enforcement operation in furtherance of lawful indictments that have existed for decades. The United States arrested a narco trafficker who is now going to stand trial in the United States in accordance with the rule of law for the crimes he's committed against our people for 15 years. A similar action was taken in 1989 against Manuel Noriega. He was arrested, indicted, convicted in a court of law, served in prison in the United States and in Panama, and the Panamanian people, the American people, are safer for it. And undeniably, the region was more stable. This law enforcement action was directed consistent with the President of the United States' responsibility as Commander-in-Chief to protect Americans at home and abroad against a fugitive who is directly responsible for narco-terrorism that has killed hundreds of thousands of Americans and created destabilizing violence throughout our hemisphere. Nicolas Maduro and his co-defendant Celia Flores have been transferred here to the United States to stand trial for their crimes. Maduro was indicted by a grand jury in the Southern District of New York and faces very serious criminal charges for his involvement in a wide-ranging conspiracy to conduct narco-terrorism, to traffic cocaine and other drugs, and conducting international weapons trafficking. The overwhelming evidence of his crimes will be presented openly in U.S. court proceedings.
And he's going to have his day in court. And look, you know, John, you talked about this earlier today, about the state of war that we are with Venezuela at the moment and why it's different from Mexico. But I think the reality is Democrats want to have it both ways again. Politically speaking, what do they do here? How do they handle this? Think about it. You're your average Democrat. Well, you're not, because you're an incredibly smart person. But imagine you're a Democrat. Do you just automatically defend a dictator who denied his own election and refused to leave and was brutal to his people? Do you just automatically take his side because it's anti-Donald Trump? Is that what you do? I mean, at one point, Chuck Schumer was literally criticizing Trump for not bringing an end to the Maduro regime. This is a flashback from 2020 on the floor of the Senate. Senator Chuck Schumer from New York, who, by the way, is losing more and more power and clout each day, that Zora Mamdani, who is defending Maduro, by the way, is saying that the United States should have left Maduro alone. But here was Schumer back in 2020, cut 21.
He brags about all these things he wants to do or is doing, but his actions belie his words. Maybe the best metaphor was his claim to bring democracy to Venezuela. There was a big policy there. It flopped. If the policy was working, Juan Guaido wouldn't be in the balcony here. He'd be in Venezuela. He'd be sitting in the president's palace, or at least waging a fight to win. He's here. And the president brags about his Venezuela policy? Give us a break. He hasn't brought an end to the Maduro regime. The Maduro regime is more powerful today and more entrenched today than it was when the president began.
Okay, so, but it's not anymore. So I assume then Chuck Schumer is standing up and applauding President Trump for bringing an end to the Maduro regime. I would assume that. I would imagine so. And I would imagine that he'll stand up in Congress and offer some sort of accolades or some sort of maybe a certificate of some kind. Or not. Cut 20.
So what can the Congress do about it is the next question.
Well, the next question is very simple. And that is that we have the War Powers Act. That's a privilege resolution, which means the Republicans can't block it. Tim Kaine and I and Rand Paul are sponsors of it. It's going to come to the floor this week. And if it is voted for, if it's voted positively in both houses, then the president can't do another thing in Venezuela without the okay of Congress. We have to pass it.
And you're...
And- And, of course, that was the unbiased journalist George Stephanopoulos asking the question, what can Congress do about it? Which was not a question he was asking when Bill Clinton decided that he was going to have peace in Kosovo and went after Slobodan Milosevic, whose name has never been able, a name I was really able to really say. But the unbiased journalist George Stephanopoulos doesn't want to bring that up. He doesn't want to bring that up, of course. And President Clinton warned him multiple times over the years. And then, of course, went after the Albanians. And there was a humanitarian crisis. And then in 1999, after Milosevic intensified attacks and rejected peace terms, NATO began airstrikes in March of 1999 to further deter attacks and pressure Milosevic, with Clinton framing it as a moral and strategic imperative to stop ethnic cleansing. The 78-day NATO bombing campaign in 1999 to force Milosevic to withdraw forces and accept a peace agreement for Kosovo. But the unbiased journalist George Stephanopoulos was like, what can Congress do about it? Well, what can Congress do? Chuck Schumer wanted Maduro gone. You know, I think Mamdani is nuts, but I'll give him credit for honesty, because at least Mamdani is coming out and saying it. He's, you know, doesn't believe that we should have gone after Maduro, doesn't believe that we should have done that. He made it clear to the president. He made it clear to President Trump that we should not have done what we did. And he was very, very clear about that. Oh, I also have a couple clips for you from his inauguration speech on New Year's Day. It's kind of funny to me, actually, because Mamdani is going all in, just all in on socialism. And he's not hiding from it. He's not hiding from it at all. He's embracing it. And I posted a clip of this on social media. They tried to put Bernie in a corner, but nobody puts Bernie in a corner. All right? They tried to hide Bernie. They tried to hide the socialists. They can't do that. They can't do that. And that's the problem. But here's Mamdani saying he spoke to Trump to register his opposition. Cut 25.
I was briefed by my first deputy mayor, my chief of staff, my chief counsel, the police commissioner, as well as other members of my team. I called the president and spoke with him directly to register my opposition to this act and to make clear that it was an opposition based on being opposed to a pursuit of regime change, to the violation of federal international law, and a desire to see that be consistent each and every day.
His reaction was nothing because the call never really happened. Let's understand this. I was briefed. Look at this guy's friggin' ego. I was briefed today by my team on the... You turn on the news. You got the same news that everybody else got. What do you got? Some special double secret probation briefing from your team? From my top team, my deputy mayor and the police commissioner. What do they know that the rest of us don't know from watching Fox News out of curiosity? And I called the president to let him know. Well, how'd that go? Well, they took a message. So, oh, you didn't actually speak to the president? No, but I called to let him know. And I made sure that White House switchboard operator wrote it down and I had her read it back to me. Okay? Had her read it back to me and she got it, nailed it, verbatim. Word for word, this is not okay. And then I called back a few hours later, and she was still there, and she said, I still have your message for the president. Got it. So, yeah. And then, woo! But he's also ushering in the age of socialism right now, and he's not hiding from it in any way, shape, or form. He is using the D word. Democratic socialist. This is cut 28 from Zora Mamdani's first speech after being sworn in as mayor of New York City. Cut 28.
Here is what I want you to expect from the administration that this morning moved into the building behind me. We will transform the culture of City Hall from one of no to one of how. We will answer to all New Yorkers not to any billionaire or oligarch who thinks they can buy our democracy. We will govern without shame and insecurity, making no apology for what we believe. I was elected as a democratic socialist, and I will govern as a democratic socialist.
The Rich Scioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
They're not hiding it anymore. They were hiding it for a long time. For a long time, they were hiding it. They were pretending like they were not going to do the whole Democrat socialist thing. Right? They hid them. They said, you stand over there. You stay in the corner. Don't you show your face. But guess what? Now they're openly. Bernie Sanders was there. AOC was there. Bernie Sanders was yelling at Mamdani's inauguration. And Mamdani said it. I'm a Democrat socialist. Wait, those shoes, Matt, were $630. Is that true?
Yeah, the shoes that Zora Mamdani's wife was wearing at the swearing-in ceremony.
God, you sound like hell.
Well, he went to me at the worst time possible. I just finished coughing. I'm better now. My voice sounds dreamy again.
Jesus.
Your voice sounds dreamy again?
Well, it sounds better than it did 2 seconds ago.
I'm dreaming of a global pandemic when I hear your voice. That's what I'm dreaming of.
I just have a cough. I swear I'm not sick.
And he's out in Arizona, too, Justin. Well, we're all freezing our blanks off over here. This guy's out in the heat and the humidity and the dryness of Arizona, and he's still coughing.
Yeah, I'm looking at the lower third for the show. It's 37 degrees outside, 35 degrees outside. And he's like, oh, but I got a little cough. I'm in Arizona.
I didn't get the cough here. I got the cough in New Jersey and then traveled to Arizona with it.
Matt, are you doing dry January, by the way?
I do dry every month. I don't really.
No, dry Coca-Cola. That's what I meant.
Oh.
Are you abstaining from Coca-Cola for the month of January?
I haven't had it yet today, but I had one yesterday, so no.
You still doing creamy vanilla?
You know, I haven't seen it in stores recently. I think it's done with. There may be a case here and there, but when I was at the grocery store yesterday, I didn't see any. At first, I condemned it on air. I said there wasn't much difference, and it was sort of disappointing. It was still tasty, but it tasted exactly like a generic vanilla Coke. However, I kind of got hooked on it over the holidays, and now I need it, I think.
Well, you know, Bridget and I went to see The Housemaid the other night with Sydney Sweeney.
Ooh la la.
Who's not hard on the eyes, by the way, Sydney Sweeney. Oh. Turns out she has good genes. And they have that fountain soda machine where they have like 750 different things and you push the buttons and everything. And yeah. I thought of you because I picked Coke Zero. And along the line of it is all the vanilla Coke and the cherry Coke and the, you know, Fruity Pebbles Coke or whatever. Actually, it's a different cocaine. That's the cocaine that Maduro was selling. But I thought of you, though, because of it had all those different flavors. So.
Yeah, if I were a wealthy man, I would have one of those little dispensers installed into my home because the fountain soda tastes better than any other version of Coca-Cola.
It always does. A draft beer tastes better than a canned beer or bottled beer, in my opinion. You know, it's the carbonation gives it something.
The plastic bottle, I think we can all agree, is the worst flavor. Cans and glass bottles are good, but the fountain soda, that's another level.
It's amazing this man has a Ivy League education, isn't it, Justin?
He graduated from Harvard, and he's currently going to Johns Hopkins. God.
And this is what he spends his time thinking about.
They really let anybody into Ivy League.
Anybody.
Jeez.
Writing my thesis on the glories of Coca-Cola.
You are putting good use to George W. Bush's No Child Left Behind, let me tell you what.
I'm going to say that you're obsessed with Coke and just see if Trump sends somebody to raid you out of your house in the middle of the night and drag you to a military prison.
That would be kind of funny.
I mean, you're in Arizona. You're not far from the border, so it's a good chance. It could happen.
He's got his hands full. He's a busy man. I think he's got bigger things to worry about than my addiction to holiday-flavored Coca-Colas.
By the way, you know, your girl, Sia Weaver, that's Ma'am Dami's housing woman.
Yeah, she's not my girl, but go
your
on.
Girl, she said private property, including and kind of especially home ownership, is a weapon of white supremacy masquerading as wealth building public policy. Seize private property. That was what she said on her now deleted Twitter account from 2019. How do you think she feels about $630 shoes?
Well, the most annoying part about that shoe controversy is that people on the left started clapping back, saying, oh, well, Melania wears expensive attire all the time. But Melania isn't a socialist. The Donald and Melania, they are they're capitalists. They're not telling people that they have to share their earnings with the rest of society against their will. I just got to stay away from exit to cesspool. But the whole thing is quite annoying for numerous reasons. First of all, the wearing of the fancy shoes, and then the left's response was infuriating.
How did the left respond?
With the claim that, well, Melania dresses in fancy clothing as well. Which is
so
a
that
stupid
was their
counter argument.
Oh, you're saying that was their defense. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, but she's not running around trying to be a socialist.
Exactly. Melania's not saying that the state should take your earnings and redistribute them.
And by the way, Melania wouldn't be caught dead in a pair of $630 shoes. Her shoes are like $6,000. Please, don't disrespect Melania. Okay, she's not going to go into DSW and get in a pair of shoes. Just saying.
And I don't know much about fashion. I'm looking at them
well,
right
that's
now.
Obvious.
They aren't even particularly good. I don't know. I need to take a shot, but they're not even particularly good looking shoes.
No, they're not.
I think
they're
she overpaid.
Not. A little bit. Yeah. She should have gone to Nordstrom Rack. You got a good deal there. Just saying, you know.
Is that where you got your Tom Ford tie?
Yeah. That. Yes. How'd you know?
I know. I remember. I remember you mentioned it. That was a great deal.
That was a great deal. It's fantastic.
You wear a Tom Ford? James Bond wears Tom Ford.
And he doesn't wear it as well as I do, but you know he does. So
I've never seen James Bond on Fox News.
You know what? By the way, we got home the other day and we got a nice box in the mail for Gary, the new puppy, from our friends at Braxton's Animal Works. Great place, right in Wayne, PA. Local shop. They do it all. Pet retail and great services, and they're really nice people. John and Mindy, really wonderful people. And they even have a self-service dog wash, which is what we're going to bring Gary to do, a self-service dog wash. Isn't that nice? But they sent us a nice box of treats and chew toys for Gary as like a welcome home present. Wasn't that nice?
Oh, that's pretty cool.
So, yeah, because, you know, a lot of people think you got to go to the big box animal stores, at Petco or whatever, but Braxton's Animal Works in Wayne is, you know, locally owned, family and owned. So I just thought that was really nice of them to do that. And they had to ship it to Jersey, you know, so just saying. But that was good. And I think Gary might have chewed through all the toys they sent. They sent him Philly cheesesteak treats. Philly cheesesteak flavored dog treats. How cool is that?
Whoa. I might even try one of those. Those sound
tasty. I know. I'm just saying. You should eat some. Given your taste in food, DeSantis.
It would be an upgrade.
It really would, Justin. You could put it on a nice piece of brioche bread and drink it down with a nice, icy, delicious vanilla Coca-Cola, and he'd be in heaven. He'd be in heaven. And you wonder why you're sick.
Oh, I'm not sick. I just have a cough.
Oh, man. All right. Do I have to take a break or what? What do I got to do? I'm really late.
Wrap it up.
Wrap up the show?
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. Oh, that's wonderful. Great. All right. Well, then we'll turn it over to Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla. Have a great rest of your night. Keep the conversation going on X at Rich Zeoli and Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, and TikTok, Rich Zeoli Show. Thank you for listening. See you tomorrow.